We'll start off with reading the section in Genesis 18 as the run-up to this passage. A lot of reading. I know you can do it. Let's do it together. Genesis 18, verses 16 through 33 helps us understand what's going on. So Jesus, in his Old Testament manifestation, and two angels have appeared in the desert before Abraham's tent. And Abraham shows him hospitality, and the Lord speaks to Abraham, reaffirms promises given to him. And then just before they leave, we have this section of interaction with Abraham. Then the men set out from there, and they looked down towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I have chosen him, that he may command his children in his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him." Then the Lord said, "Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me, and if not, I will know." So the men turned from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord. Then Abraham drew near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to put the righteous to death with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just?" And the Lord said, "If I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake." Abraham answered and said, "Behold, I have undertaken to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes. Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for lack of 5? And he said, "I will not destroy it if I find 45 there." Again he spoke to him and said, "Suppose 40 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 40, I will not do it." Then he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there." He answered, "I will not do it if I find 30 there." He said, "Behold, I have undertaken to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 20, I will not destroy it." And then he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak again. But this once, suppose 10 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. We started with Lot last week. We watched him enter Sodom. And now we find Lot in Sodom, chapter 19, verse 1. Two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. So how did Lot get there? We read in Peter that he was a righteous man. How did this righteous man come to live in this most depraved, this most wicked of cities? Well, last week we traced the storyline of Lot's seeming haphazard collection of unwise choices. It began as Abraham and Lot were so rich, they had so many flocks, so much livestock, that the land could not support them living in close proximity to each other. There just wasn't enough pasture to feed all of these livestock. There wasn't enough water for the animals to drink. So Abraham said, "Well, we have to separate." And he offered Lot the choice. You pick where you want to go, and I'll go the opposite way. Well, Lot looked up, and he saw the Jordan Valley area, fertile, green. He saw an opportunity to grow his herds and livestock. He couldn't miss this opportunity by letting Abraham have it, so he chose it for himself. Now, the Jordan Valley scene was dominated by several cities, Sodom, Gomorrah, others, all urban magnates. These cities were hotbeds of wickedness, where the ethic and culture was promiscuous, violent, and edgy. Back in Chapter 13:13, we read, "Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord." Places to stay away from if you're trying to maintain or pursue a lifestyle of focus on God and good. But these urban magnates were attractive to Lot, and he was drawn close so that he pitched his tents near Sodom. And then, perhaps predictably, not so long after, we find him living in Sodom. But not everyone found Sodom to be such a great place. In particular, God himself didn't. We got a picture of God's viewpoint of Sodom in Genesis 18. We've already read it. Verse 17, the Lord says, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do?" Interesting. God communicates to his own people, the people that are near to his heart, and he opens his heart to them. Perhaps you know of what I mean. And in verse 20, he opens his heart and he says that because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see if that's really what's going on. In other words, sin and injustice have a voice and they cry out and God hears. And God is attentive to sin in the human realm. He's just not out there, remote and separated from what happens on earth. God cares. He is tuned into the channel where sin and injustice cry out. God is not indifferent. You say, well, if God's not indifferent, look at our world today. Why doesn't God act? Well, the answer is God has bigger plans at play right now. He is saving people from their sins. He's saving them from eternal consequences to their sins. And when that play is over, when that plan is completed, when he's done with that work, he will pull the trigger on justice upon injustice, on punishment for sin. Make no mistake. The fact that he unleashed his judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah is clear evidence that God is not going to let it go. But he says, the outcry is great and I will go down to see whether they have done according to the outcry that has come to me. So God doesn't make superficial judgments. He's going to make a thorough examination. Not that God didn't know from heaven. He did. But he's trying to communicate something to us here, that God will not make a superficial assessment. He will know exactly what's going on before he pulls the trigger on his judgment. So after the announcement of judgment, the angels head on down to Sodom. The Lord is still standing there, and Abraham stands before him because he has a prayer to offer. He's going to intercede. And he prayed and he didn't let it go. We've read it through. Would you spare this wicked city if there are 50 righteous men? And he bargains down to 10. So God hears Abraham's prayer. And God responds to Abraham's intercession. And God changes his announced plan in response to Abraham's prayer. This is very important. Prayer matters. Prayer changes things. Now God knew what he was going to do. He wanted Abraham to pray so that he could change his plan. I mean, it was all part of God's plan, but prayer changes things from God's announced intentions. Great encouragement to pray. And also, note that God cares about just a few. If there's only 10 righteous men in this wicked city, because God cares about the people. God has a different view of numbers and statistics than men do. In other words, a little church that only touches a few lives is significant to God. Well, with this background, let's move to Genesis 19. The two angels come to Sodom. Lot is in the gate. He greets them. He invites them to turn aside and come to his house. Notice Lot's not in a tent anymore. Lot has a house. We see this verse 2 and verse 3. Turn aside to your servant's house. Abraham's still living in a tent because he hasn't put down roots in this world. He's still following God's command to him. But Lot has put down roots in Sodom. He's taken up residence in Sodom, that wicked city. This is a place he can call home. Yet Peter tells us that his righteous soul was tormented over the lawless and sensual conduct of his neighbors in Sodom. Strange, paradoxical choice there, Lot. Why do you stay there? Why did you buy a house there if you're so tormented? It's like hitting yourself on the thumb with a hammer because it feels so good when it stops. Lot. But this is what Lot has chosen. And so he invites the men into his house. He is very hospitable. He offers them a home away from home, in his home. He offers them a meal, a great feast. He personally bakes bread for them. And so they sit down to eat. But before the meal is over and they retire, this strange and ugly incident happens. The men of the city, verse 4, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man surrounded the house. This mob gathers and they call to Lot because their intent is homosexual gang rape. And the extent of those who gathered to come is all the men in the city, the young, the old, rough and violent men, cultured gentlemen. And they're going to do this in public, not in private. This is Sodom. This is Sodom. This is why God was going to destroy it. And Lot hears them cry out. He comes out to face the mob, shuts the door behind him in order to protect his guests. He remonstrates with them, "Don't act so wickedly." And he offers his two daughters to them. "Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof." Well, his motive of trying to protect the men is honorable, but his reasoning, his choices. Lot, what are you doing? You are a protector of your guests, the men, but you're also the protector and the father of your daughters. These are shockingly bad decisions. You are so confused about right and wrong. You're palpably weak in giving in to the pressure of the men to do what is so wrong. Well, the mob will have nothing of that. "Stand back," they say. They will not listen to him. Though he's become a leader in Sodom, he was sitting in the gates of the city, he has no authority with the gathered group. He has no persuasive power. They say to him, "This fellow has come to sojourn, and he has become the judge. Don't judge us. You're calling us, you say, don't act so wickedly. Who are you to judge us?" They have anger and contempt toward Lot because he is standing between them and the fulfillment of their lusts. And the mob surges forward to break the door down. At this point, the angels intervene. Verse 10, the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. Lot had been feebly trying to save them from being violated by the vicious, violent mob. Were they ever at risk? Reality is sometimes different than it appears. There's more than meets the eye. Angel hands extend from behind the door and drag Lot in. The same hands shut the door, and then they strike all the men with blindness. Small and great, they're all blind. And so the angels, who obviously were not at risk, sufficient power to deal with this, the angels disable the mob's malevolent intentions. And but note what it says. They struck with blindness the men were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out groping for the door. Even though they're blind, they're still going after it. They're still trying to get through the door. And they're still trying to fulfill their desires, even though God has disabled them from doing it. So the story leaves them there, wearing themselves out, groping to fulfill their off-the-rails desires. But now we zero in on Lot, verse 12. The men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons, daughters, anybody you care about in this city, bring them out, because we are about to destroy this place, because the outcry against its people has become great before the Lord. The Lord has sent us to destroy it." So they went down to assess the situation. Is it as bad as what the outcry said? Well, this mob situation has pretty well confirmed that one, hasn't it? Yep, it is. And so they are ready to destroy the city of Sodom. And so Lot, verse 14, goes immediately out and says to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city." He has urgency, and he's trying to keep them from the doom that God is about to unleash upon Sodom. "Up, get out. How can I say it more urgently?" But his sons-in-law are completely unresponsive, because Lot has no credibility with them. He seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. He's as real as he can get. He's as urgent as he can get. He wants to keep them from dying. And his sons-in-law think it's a joke. They don't take him seriously. Why? Well, they don't respect him. Lot was not a man you listened to. Lot had a life full of compromises. And as serious as Lot could possibly get, nobody is going to take him seriously. Verse 15, as morning dawned, the angels speak to Lot again. They urge him, saying, "Up." No, wait a minute. This all started in the evening. And the angels say, "We're about to destroy the city, and up, get out of this place." He goes to his sons-in-law, but what did he do all night long? He's still fiddling around. "Lot, why are you still here? Why are you still in Sodom? What have you been doing all night long? Imminent judgment announced in the evening? I mean, did you really think that Sodom was okay and the angels had it all wrong? Did you think the sin of Sodom wasn't so bad? The mob incident should have convinced you otherwise. Or Lot, did you not believe God? Didn't you see the miracle of blindness? Did you think God gets it wrong and is not powerful enough to do what he says he's going to do? Lot, what have you been doing? Paying bills? Writing your memoirs? Checking social media? Taking out the garbage? Trying to decide if you're going to leave? Your life, your family's lives are at risk. Why are you still here?" Those the angels urge him, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city." And again, verse 16, but he lingered. He's indecisive. His heart is divided. "Yeah, I know what God says, but I love Sodom. There's a little wickedness here, but it's my home. These are my people. Here's my roots. This is my identity. This is all I've known for so long." Contrast that to Abraham, who God calls, Genesis 12, to leave everything that's familiar to him, and his homeland and to go off to a land that he doesn't even tell him his destination. And Abraham obeys. But not Lot. He can't figure out what he wants to do. How can I give this all up? So now the angels act instead of speak. Verse 16. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. They seized them by the hands. Two angels, four hands. Four family members. They dragged them by the hand outside the city. Why? Because the Lord was merciful to him. The Lord was not going to let Lot be the victim of his own spiritual dullness. He's in a fog. He didn't get it. The Lord is not going to let him be the victim of his own spiritual blindness. He cannot see what is about to happen. The Lord is not going to let him be the victim of his own lethargy. I want to leave, but I can't get up off the couch. So the angels bring him out. They dragged him and his family out and set him outside the city. And one of them, in verse 17, said, "Escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away." Escape for your life. What's at stake? Your life. Destruction comes. God has said it. It's coming now. Escape for your life. And don't look back. If you look back, your heart may betray you. We've already seen the condition of your heart. We've already seen the inclination of your heart. If you look back, when you see Sodom, you may stop. You may turn back. There is no time to spare. Don't look back and don't stop anywhere in the valley. Don't give an opportunity to your unstable heart. You can't handle it. Because then you might go back and perish. Escape to the hills. Don't stop in the valley. Escape to the hills. Get clear out of here, lest you be swept away in the destruction that God is bringing. This is what's at stake. Don't expose yourself to the possibility of destruction. This whole place, whole valley will be destroyed. Listen to God. Believe God. God speaks truth. I know it right now, it seems so unreal to you. It's not happening yet. It's so unlike anything you've ever seen or experienced. But God always speaks the truth. Believe him when he speaks to you. Verse 18, Lot speaks. So judgment is coming. God has delayed it. And yet Lot is going to argue with the angels. He doesn't want to go clear to the hills. He's afraid. He's afraid he won't make it that far, even though God is giving him promises. God is taking him by the God has led him. God is delivering him. God is rescuing him. But he's afraid, and he can't trust God. So let me just go to this little city over here. It's not all the way out, but can you spare that? And God is merciful to him. He said, "I can do nothing until you arrive here." That's precious words, right? I can do nothing because I'm committed not to harm you, Lot. And I cannot unleash my judgment until you're out of here. Would you please get going? Because my love holds my wrath in abeyance. But I'm committed to punish. Get going. Verses 23 through 25. Sun rises. Lot comes to Zoar. Then the Lord rains on Sodom and Gomorrah, sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and there's just total destruction. I mean, he overthrows the cities. He overthrows the entire valley, all the inhabitants of the cities, even everything that grew on the ground. There's not a cactus left. There's not a dandelion left. And so God fulfills his word. Verse 26, but Lot's wife behind him, he was leading the way, Lot's wife behind him looked back. And she became a pillar of salt. Now the angels have told them, escape your life, do not look back or stop anywhere. But she didn't believe God. She thought it was rhetorical overstatement. And didn't obey God. Don't look back. And why'd she look back? Because her heart was still in Sodom. I know God says to get out of here, but I want to be there. And that's has been all my life. And my heart's wrapped up around the city. So she can't obey God. One last lingering, longing look, but God fulfills his word, and she's changed into a pillar of salt. Verse 27, Abraham watches it all. The smoke of the land goes up like a smoke of a furnace. You can just see, like, when tires are on fire and there's this billowing smoke because it's sulfur and fire and brimstone. Then we have the aftermath. In verse 29, so when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out. Now, Abraham had prayed that if there'd just be 10 righteous people, that God would spare the city. Well, there weren't 10, there's only 4. But he spares them, so he doesn't spare the city. But he hears the intent of Abraham's prayer, and he saves the righteous people, even though there's only 4 of them. So God hears Abraham's prayer. And then there's the aftermath, verses 30 and following. Interesting. Lot has asked the angel that Zoar would be spared because he was afraid to go to the hills. Now, he's afraid to live in Zoar, and he goes to the hills, despite the fact that the destruction is over and that God had promised that he would spare it. Revelation of where Lot was at, if we didn't already know. And then he's in a cave. From Sodom, the rich man, who moves to Sodom, to a cave. He's lost everything. He just has the clothes on his back. He has 2 daughters. They commit incest with him. I mean, they were raised in Sodom. They lived the Sodom lifestyle. Lot had not led his family. They were not different from the people around them. They were just like them. Daughters give birth to 2 enemy nations, 2 God's chosen people, Moab and Ammon. So there you have it. The story of Lot. So what do we learn from Lot? Let me talk about 3 things that we learn from Lot. First of all, Lot was in Sodom, but it's way more significant that Sodom was in Lot. Lot was in Sodom, but more importantly, Sodom was in Lot. His heart was hitched to Sodom. The sin bothered him, but not enough to take decisive action. He had loved the best land for himself. He loved a house instead of tents. He loved the culture and social status and the financial opportunities. So it's Sodom for him. So, Bart, are you saying a godly man can't live in a Sodom? No, I'm not saying that. But Lot couldn't, because he couldn't handle it. And the problem wasn't Sodom. The problem was his heart. It wasn't where he lived, but how much he loved and wanted, and what he gave up for it. There were lasting consequences to Lot's love of Sodom. Yes, Lot was a righteous man, so he was forgiven. But the truth is that it does matter how we live. There are consequences. And the consequences for Lot were weighty, because Lot lost everything. He lost his riches. He lost his possession. He lost his house. He lost his status. Everything he moved to Sodom to get, it's up in smoke. Lost it all. Because he loved that instead of the Lord. He lost his wife, though not his life. A very high price. And it's not just that she died, but she died far from God. He lost his credibility well before the destruction came. He lost his influence. He lost his respect. He lost his authority, because of who he was, the choices he made, the character he became. His neighbors in Sodom didn't listen to him. His sons-in-law didn't listen to him. His wife didn't believe him because she looked back. Lot had no impact on anyone. Why? Because Lot loved this world more than God. A life of compromises. He lost his way. His spiritual priorities were muddled. First takeaway. Secondly, is that the Lord knows how to judge the unrighteous. And we read last week from 2 Peter how Peter cites the example of Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot when he's showing that God punishes sin and that he rescues the ungodly. Let me just reread that for you. If by turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to ashes, he condemned them to extinction, making them an example of what's going to happen to the ungodly. Then I'll skip a little bit. Then the Lord knows how to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment. In other words, Sodom and Gomorrah are assurance, they're evidence that God will judge sin. If not, what was he doing there? Before the final judgment came, this sin was so bad, I got to deal with this now. And so God judges sin. It's evidence that the Lord knows how to judge the unrighteous. God will judge sinners. The key is the day of judgment, a coming day when all the world will be accountable to God and be sentenced to punishment as each person's sins deserve. But right now we're waiting. But God won't forget. God won't overlook. God is just. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? God is just and he cares about sin and injustice. And Sodom's destruction is a solemn witness to this fact. And we look at our world and we read the papers and we read our news feeds. And if you're like me, we're very troubled about sin. We're very troubled about injustice. We're very troubled about wickedness. God has not forgotten. God knows how to reserve punishment and justice for the day of judgment. He will not let it go. God will judge. Sodom and Gomorrah clearly assert that to us. And in the final place, Lot teaches us that the Lord knows how to rescue the ungodly, back to this passage in 2 Peter 2. And if he rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over the lawless deeds that he saw and heard. Then, the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials. The Lord knows how to rescue the godly. He will. He will rescue the godly, like Lot. For Lot, he said, here's a rope. Pull yourself up out of this pit. The Lord is rescuing you. Just grab this rope and pull yourself out. Up, get out, the angels say. All night. Morning comes. Up, take your wife, lest, and your family, lest you be consumed. Grab this rope. But he lingered. And finally, forget the rope. They grab him by the hand and drag him out of the city. Because the Lord will rescue the ungodly. I mean, almost unwillingly, the Lord will rescue the ungodly. But you know what? Lot's not so different from us, is he? And we loved our sins and we wouldn't let them go until the Lord drags us out. Our hearts are so given to what will destroy us. And yet the Lord knows how to rescue the ungodly. He will rescue you from yourself. He will rescue you from your desires that hold you a slave. He will rescue you from your sins that cry out against you, because he sent Jesus at the highest price to himself to make a way for you to return to God. And he sends good news that everyone who believes in Jesus receives forgiveness of sins through his name. And he sends his Spirit to work within us. It's not just Jesus did something out there. It's not just that the message comes to you, but he sends his Spirit to work within us to change our hearts and inclinations, to open blind eyes, to open deaf ears, to soften hard hearts, to make us willing in the day of his power. The Lord knows how to rescue sinners from their sins. He knows how to rescue the godly. And that is the good news of the gospel. Let's pray.